Ellen, has that been Scott Joplin this morning, who you've been playing?
This is for Juneteenth. It's
for Juneteenth.
A woman for the Christ, the first African woman to have written a symphony.
Wow. And what's her name?
Florence Price.
Florence Price. Go out and get some CDs. Florence Price, thank you. It's really lovely. It sounds a bit like Joplin. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, this morning's reading is from the Lotus Sutra. Sutra means thread, like for sewing or weaving cloth. So Buddhist sutras are little threads of speech that should be easy to repeat and remember. Kind of like hop on pop. This thread was supposedly spun, the one I'm going to read, from the words of the Buddha himself. After he started talking again, he had mysteriously fallen silent to the distress of the 80,000 disciples who gathered to hear what he promised would be his deepest teachings yet. But now he says he's worried that they'll misunderstand. He's not going to talk. His chief disciple, Shariputra, begs him to resume, and finally he relents, saying to Shariputra, "For your sake, I'll now explain the matter." At once, 5,000 of that great congregation get up and leave, while he makes no effort to stop them. Once they've gone, he assures Shariputra and the rest that those who split were a bunch of turkeys anyway. And so, now this assembly of mine is free of branches and leaves, made up solely of the steadfast and truthful. Shariputra, it is well that these persons of overbearing arrogance have withdrawn. Now listen carefully, and I will preach for you. In the course of his sermon, he tells this story. A long time ago, a rich man lived in a village. His wealth was immeasurable. He had many paddy fields, houses, servants. His manor house was large, but it had only one gate. In that house lived several hundred people. The buildings were in decay, the fences and walls were corrupted, the bases of the pillars were rotten, and the beams and ridge poles were tilted and slanted. All of a sudden, fires broke out and spread all over. In this house lived many children of the rich man. He was frightened at the fires and thought, "I'm able to get out of the burning house safely, but my children are still inside. They're engrossed in playing. They don't know that fires are coming toward them. They're not afraid. They don't know what fire is. This house has only one gate. Worse still, the gate is narrow and small. My children are too young to know this. They're attached to the place where they're playing. They may get burned. I'd better tell them of the danger. They must come out quickly so as not to be burned to death." "Come out quickly," he warned them with these good words out of his compassion toward them, but they were too engrossed in playing to hear the words of their father. They didn't want to come out. They ran about happily. They only glanced at their father occasionally. He thought, "If they and I do not get out at once, we shall all be burned. I must now invent some expedient means that will make it possible for the children to escape harm." The father understood his children and knew which toys and curious objects each child liked and what would delight them. And so he said, "The kind of playthings that you like are rare and hard to find. If you do not take them when you can, you'll surely regret it later. The toys you wish to have are outside the gate. There are sheep carts, deer carts, and bullock carts. You can play with them. Come out of this burning house quickly now." What wondrous love that father must have for his children. This must be what helps him to think so fast. In that spirit, let's sing hymn number 18, "What Wondrous Love." Well, in the Buddha's story, the house is on fire and the children are too distracted to notice. So the father must devise what he calls expedient means in order to lure them out. He yells that the toys you wish to have are outside the gate. There are sheep carts, deer carts, bullock carts. You can play with them. Come out of this burning house quickly now. Will the kids fall for it? If you can't trust your father, then who can you trust? Well, that's a good question to consider on Father's Day. The children rushed quickly out of the burning house, pushing one another and striving to be first. The rich man who saw them come out safely was relieved and danced with joy. They said to their father, "Father, give us the toys. Give us the sheep carts, deer carts, bullock carts that you promised us." The rich man presented them then with just one cart, drawn by a great white ox. The cart was tall, wide, and deep, adorned with many treasures, and had bells hanging on the four sides. This great man gave this cart to his children because his wealth was so immeasurable that his vast storehouses were full of treasures. That's the cart that's on the cover of your order of service. The children rode in this great cart and had the greatest joy they'd ever had because they'd never expected to receive a gift like this. After telling him this parable, the Buddha asked his disciple, Shariputra, "What do you think? Did this father lie to his children?" Shariputra answered, "No. The father spoke as he did in order to save their lives, saying what was not precisely true in order to get them out of the house with him." The Buddha now explains that he himself is the rich father. The burning house is this world of illusory pleasures and the suffering caused by human craving. The children are its citizens, and the magnificent ox cart is the path to liberation that he teaches. He's always looking for ways to guide people out of harmful mental and emotional habits that lead to frustration and unhappiness, habits that modern psychology might call conditioning. The task is so urgent that he must often employ what he calls expedient or skillful means in order to hook and hold their attention in spite of themselves. Sometimes this involves telling people things that might not be precisely true, just like the father does in the story. So naturally, we have to ask, when is he using skillful means and when is he not? When is he being completely honest with us, telling us what we came to learn? The Buddha now explains to Shariputra that some of what have been presented as major Buddhist teachings must now be understood as still more examples of skillful means. Excuse me. Expedients used to lure people out of the house, through the narrow gate, and hopefully onto the cart. This includes the concept of nirvana, or the extinction of all those cravings and desires that cause us to suffer. It has been taught as a state or a condition that you must struggle to enter, you know, reaching nirvana. But now the Buddha, still in a fatherly way, says, "I have, for my disciples' sake, established this expedient means, preaching the way that ends all suffering and showing them nirvana. Once the children of the Buddha have carried out this path, then in a future existence they will all become Buddhas. But though I preach nirvana, it's not true extinction. All phenomena, from the very first, have of themselves constantly borne the marks of tranquil extinction." So nirvana is not exactly nirvana, not exactly a special state or condition beyond what's experienced in daily life, but rather something that in some ways is always present right here, right now. So the Buddha taught nirvana as a way of holding our attention so he could teach us something else. So what's next? What about the notion that the Buddha's way can be followed while riding different vehicles like those of Mahayana, Hinayana, or Vajrayana Buddhism? These names mean the great vehicle, the small vehicle, and the thunderbolt vehicle. And they're used to describe the religion's major schools, all of which developed long after the Buddha's death, though he's somehow already aware of them. Pretty skillful. But now he tells us, "I've employed the power of expedient means to unfold and demonstrate this doctrine of three vehicles. But all Buddhas preach the single vehicle way. Shariputra, that rich man, first used three types of carriages to entice his children, but later he gave them just the large carriage adorned with jewels. Despite this, that rich man was not guilty of falsehood. The thus come one, meaning this Buddha today, does the same, and he's without falsehood. The thus come one preaches the three vehicles to attract and guide living beings, but later he employs just the one great vehicle to save them. For this reason, you should understand that Buddhas employ the power of expedient means, and because they do so, they make distinctions in the one Buddha vehicle and preach it as three. Kind of complicated. So when can we be certain that he's really teaching what he's teaching? And when is he using skillful means to catch us off guard and teach us something else? What's expedient? And what's true? How about now? Now that he's just admitted to this practice. Be careful. Remember how the Buddha set up this whole discussion. 80,000 disciples had gathered to listen to him, but 5,000 left as soon as he announced that he was going to analyze and explain the most profound aspects of his wisdom. Too heavy or difficult for them, I guess, but not for us. He assures those who remain that they are his real core students, like a tree trunk that remains after the branches and leaves have been pruned. Now, what would I say if I really wanted to get your attention and make sure that you also thought you were one of a select group of very special people who are truly capable of both understanding what I say and putting it into practice? What would I say? How about, now that those bench warmers have gone, I can finally preach the truth to the A-team. Give yourselves a pat on the back and listen up. How do we know that he didn't arrange all of this ahead of time with the crowd who got up and left before he went on about there being no bus stop called Nirvana and no great or small vehicle to ride there? That would be a very skillful arrangement. Expedient means to make the rest of us listen intently so his teaching will hit us like a thunderbolt. I tell you, Shariputra, you and the others are all my children, and I am a father to you. For repeated ages you have burned in the flames of sufferings, but I will save you all and cause you to escape from the threefold world. So this is the Buddha's Father's Day message. We're so used to thinking of the Buddha as a cross-legged, calmly smiling statue of a person that it's easy to forget that he was a husband and a father before he became a preacher. Both his wife Yashodhara and their son Rahula are said to have joined his order of disciples, but we don't know if they were present for this particular sermon. Maybe they're among the 5,000 who got up and left earlier. Maybe they had heard it all before. Like any preacher's family, it's likely to have done. They could be standing outside now, whispering or chuckling with the others, in on the joke and the walkout routine. What do you think he's telling them now? You think it's the bit about Nirvana? But like any dad, the Buddha shares some warnings along with his wisdom. He now warns against showing disrespect to the Lotus Sutra in general, and this sermon in particular. If a person fails to have faith, but instead disrespects this sutra, immediately he will destroy all the seeds for becoming a Buddha in this world. Or perhaps he will scowl with knitted brows and harbor doubt or perplexity. You can imagine that he's just looked out in the crowd and spotted a scowler in the fifth row, third seat from the left. So scowling is bad enough. But if a person slanders this sutra, when his life comes to an end, he will enter the worst kind of hell. He'll be confined there for a whole eon, and when that eon ends, he'll be born again. He'll be born there again, over and over. Though at last he may emerge from hell, he will become a dog or jackal, lean with scabs and sores. And after he's died, he'll be born again in the body of a serpent, slithering along on his belly with little creatures biting him day and night. If he should become a human being, this just gets better. He will be puny and vile. People will not believe the things he says. The breath from his mouth will be foul and nasty. He will be ordered around by others, plagued by ailments, thin and gaunt. Though he might gain something, he would at once lose or forget it. Wouldn't you agree that it's better by far to listen to your dad? Especially if he's promised to save you, if you do so. But now that we know that dad's such a kidder, is it possible that he's pulling our legs again? Quite skillfully. So much of the Lotus Sutra is devoted to teaching us about how the Buddha employs skillful means in order to teach what he really means to teach. You have to wonder if he's ever going to teach it. We better pay close attention, because when it comes, it's going to come fast. Just a short little piece of thread there. The rule of suffering which the Buddha preaches is true and never varies. If there are living beings who do not understand the root of suffering, who are deeply attached to the causes of suffering and cannot for a moment put them aside because they are that way, the Buddha uses expedient means to preach that way. So we've heard already. There's the wind-up. Now finally, here's the pitch. As to the cause of all suffering, it has its root in greed and desire. If greed and desire are wiped out, it will have no place to dwell. You better be fast to catch that one. All suffering has its root in greed and desire. If you wipe those out of yourself, they'll have no place to dwell. That's it. The Buddha's teaching, in a nutshell. That's all it takes to play on the A-team. Put it in your pocket, hop on Pop's wagon, take it home, don't lose it or forget it, and you're practically a Buddha yourself already. It's a Father's Day gift to you. Have we finished with the expedience and all the skillful means? Is this the Buddha's real teaching at last? We may never know for certain until we know for certain. Sorry, I can't do better than that. When I started in seminary, I was the youngest student at the school. When I was an intern minister, there were people in the congregation who had great-grandchildren my age. While serving my first church, plenty of folks had grandchildren who were older than me, and they liked to tell me that, lest my head get too big. Gradually, that's changed, until now there are fewer and fewer people who have kids anywhere near my age. But though I'm now as old as some of your parents and older than some grandparents of the kids in our Sunday school, I've never really gotten into being Father Moro. There's always the Catholic priesthood for people who are into that stuff, or the senior post at a Buddhist monastery where you can also be called Father. But still, before I depart today, when I won't be coming back till September, except for one quick trip in July, I do want to leave you with something special like the Buddha did when he finally pitched that tiny piece of thread to his children. In fact, it's already in your hands, on the back of your order of service. It's a short thread of seven principles that we covenant to affirm and promote. They're not seven points that we swear to believe because they're precisely true. They're more like tools for making life better both within and outside of ourselves. What does that mean? We covenant to affirm and promote. To covenant is to make a ritual promise, not necessarily to proclaim an absolute truth. It's not so much to say something is true as to agree to be true yourself. Sometimes that's easier to do when you promise to do it in the company of others who are making the same promise themselves. To affirm is to make strong. To promote is to further the progress of something, to help move it along. So we could think of these principles as a great vehicle, or a small one, or maybe even a great small one, like a Mini Cooper I passed in the parking lot. This must belong to someone here. We could think of them as our own set of skillful means, soul stretchers, beacons on the way. Can we say them together now, before we go to our various vehicles and drive on into the summer? It's our own set of sutras. We covenant to affirm and promote, let's read them together, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. Bravo. You're the ones who can do it, by the way. That's why you're the A-team. You and all those little chuckleheads who left before my sermon. Keep that covenant in your pocket and check it every day to see if the words have changed. They do that sometimes, really. They do. They just change all on themselves. If you don't believe me, you'll just have to look and see. Why would I give you the business about something like that? Happy Father's Day from me and the Buddha too.